Welcome to the Modern Law Revolution podcast, sponsored by the Colorado Bar Association and featuring successful and happy lawyers who are revolutionizing the practice of law in Colorado. I am Erica Holmes, founder of E.L. Holmes Legal Solutions, a modern law practice focusing on family law and attorney ethics and regulation. I am also the inaugural chair of the CBA's Modern Law Practice Initiative.
And I'm Lauren Lester, your guest co-host and founder of Lester Law and co-founder of On Purpose Legal. I am also a past chair of the CBA's Modern Law Practice Initiative.
Well, it's been a minute since we talked about MLPI's mission to revolutionize the legal profession by enhancing access to innovative, client-driven, and cost-effective legal services that empower lawyers to build thriving law practices in Colorado. So MLPI's mission is particularly applicable to today's show because one of our amazing guests, Justice Hart, actually helped craft MLPI's mission statement. Spoiler alert, as much as Justice Hart is in alignment with MLPI's mission, she hates our name, specifically the term modern representation. I'm going to let her explain herself on that, but just know that any possible disdain you might hear in her tone is towards the name, not toward the mission. And also know that it is my life's mission to get her to embrace the term modern law and that one day she will shout it out with glee. Justice Hart was also instrumental in creating the organization being showcased on today's episode, Legal Entrepreneurs for Justice, a legal incubator for socially conscious law firms aiming to bridge the justice gap in Colorado. This means that they produce modern lawyers. In the interest of transparency, however, I should disclose this organization is very near and dear to Lauren and I's heart, or my's heart, or however you're supposed to say that, because we are both part of the organizing committee. And Lauren is actually a current board member. So Lauren, since you know our guests so well, why don't you go ahead and introduce them?
I would love to. These are three of some of my favorite people in the world, but certainly in the Colorado legal community. So first we have Justice Melissa Hart, who was appointed by Governor John Hickenlooper to serve on the Colorado Supreme Court on December 14th, 2017. Prior to joining the court, Justice Hart was a professor at the University of Colorado Law School. Her teaching and scholarship focused on access to justice, constitutional law, judicial decision-making, legal ethics, employment discrimination, and civil procedure. Justice Hart is a Denver native whose two fabulous children attend East High School, which is her high school alma mater. And while Justice Hart was a full-time professor, she always maintained an active and satisfying pro bono practice, and she encourages all attorneys to consider how doing pro bono work can be beneficial not only to the profession and to the community, but also to their mental and professional health. Lori Gilbertson serves as the executive director of Legal Entrepreneurs for Justice. She is a former New York City criminal prosecutor, television legal analyst, and legal educator. In addition to being LEJ's executive director, Lori also founded Tribeca Blue Consulting, where she coaches and trains professionals to use powerful and creative presentations, public speaking, and on-camera appearances to connect with their clients and their audiences. And we have Justin Bertrand, who is the founder of Peak Trust and Estates, offering modern representation in estate planning in Denver. He is a Colorado native who spent a number of years at a Denver-based law firm, followed by an accounting firm, before becoming an integral and important member of the original cohort at LEJ. So Lori, why don't you tell us, what is the mission of LEJ?
Lauren, I'm going to read to you from our mission statement, but that's really kind of just a lot of words, but I'm gonna read it to you and then we'll talk about it a little. LEJ is a small business incubator for socially conscious lawyers building sustainable practices to provide affordable quality legal solutions to low and middle income Coloradans. That is what our mission statement states, but what we really are beyond that is a public interest solution to improving access to legal services and helping bridge the justice gap in Colorado by offering training, mentoring, resources, and support to attorneys who are launching these practices to serve this hugely underserved population. Just to describe it, we're an 18-month incubator program. We provide law and business related education and training during that program. I like to call it the LEJ mini MBA. I don't know if that's going to catch on yet for marketing, but I'm trying to start that and make it happen. You know, lawyers, many lawyers don't know how to be business people. So that's where we start. We teach them not just to be lawyers, but to be legal entrepreneurs. And that's so important to the success of their businesses because we don't learn that in law school. You know, one of the many things we don't learn in law school is how to be an entrepreneur. So that's huge. We love to bring in people from the business community and lawyers like yourself, Lauren, and you, Erica, who are learning to do all this and share your knowledge so generously to teach people how they can make it work. That is what we do. It's divided into 3 6-month modules. During the first 6 months, the attorneys come in and they do have a fairly significant pro bono component where they do pro bono work for an organization in the community, which gives them the opportunity to learn some substantive law, have lots of networking opportunities, and build a community both around the lawyers that they'll be working with in that practice of law and also with the community that they're going to be serving. And then during that time, they're doing some intense training, including a boot camp that they start out with. In the next 6 months, usually their pro bono is over. But as some of our speakers have mentioned, to a person, every single person in the program continues pro bono. They continue with the organizations, and that speaks so much about the kind of people that LEJ attracts. And then as they continue that training in the next 6 months, they're kind of launching their law firms. They're still working really hard. And then in the last 6 months, we transition to a business mastermind for the lawyers, where they can really just keep forging those bonds with the LEJ community and turn to each other for business help and for accountability as they really kind of hit their strides with their law firms. And by the time we push them out of the nest at 18 months, we really expect them and know that they are poised to have these thriving, sustaining practices to serve all of these people in Colorado who really haven't had access to quality, affordable legal services that have real transparent and predictable pricing.
So LEJ is 2 years old at this point?
Yes, we launched in June of 2019.
And there have been 5 cohorts of participants. So what can you tell us that you have seen has been the impact of those participants on their communities as they've gone through the program using the tools and resources and mentoring that LEJ has provided?
Out of the 5 cohorts that we've launched in these 2 years, we currently, there are 9 LEJ law firms that have been launched that are functioning and serving clients. To give you a few more numbers, in all together in the past 2 years, LEJ participants in the community have done more in excess of 4,000 pro bono hours to serve this community. They have served in excess of 250 clients in the target market that we're talking about, people who really don't qualify for super expensive or even regular attorney rates and yet make too much money to qualify at about the, you know, what is it, about $12,000 threshold for legal aid. So more than 250 individuals and families they have served in the community. And beyond just the numbers, you know, also in the community, much like Justin, people come back and they help train the kind of that new generation. Each member of the cohort mentors someone else who's coming through LEJ. So they get both the opportunity to be a mentee, but also a mentor as they're learning and they're growing and they share their knowledge. Beyond but just the numbers, there's something, you know, just really tangible yet intangible that to be a bit of an oxymoron that the LEJ attorneys add to the community. And that is just this infusion of really new ideas, really creative ideas, and a real, this is the tangible part, that's kind of the intangible, but the tangible part in terms of their law firms and the people they serve, but just an example of what can be done, you know, an example of doing law a different way, of being willing to try something new, being creative, being courageous, being brave, as I think Justin will say, to contemplate it, plate it, and then jump right in. And they're showing that it can work and that the old model doesn't have to be the only model, that the new model can work too. and can work really well, not just for the clients, but I want to add for the lawyers in the program, for the LEJ community, and for the profession as a whole. Because LEJ lawyers, they're happy lawyers, and they're thriving, and they're serving people, and they're really living up to what we put as our LEJ motto, I'm sorry, when we started our website, which is doing well by doing good. And that's what they're doing.
So when you mentioned the people leaving the nest in going into a post-pandemic world, what does that nest actually look like?
You know, LEJ lawyers are needed more than ever in the post-pandemic world. And I think they're going to continue to support clients that way too and meet that need. We are so grateful for LawBank. LawBank is our home. So LEJ has our office at LawBank, which has remained there even during the pandemic. And LawBank graciously gives us space to do our training. We haven't done in-person training since March of 2020 when the pandemic started, but LawBank has remained open. So in a testament to them, they have just kept running and running. I think that some people have been in, and we are looking to kind of figure out what, as an organization, what LEJ's plan looks like in terms of going back to in-person, because there is something about those in-person trainings that are wonderful. There's also something about, you know, being online kind of as we are now, that's also great. You know, I'm coming to you from Maryland right now because I'm visiting family and we're able to still do this, and everyone's kind of all over the country. So, you know, we want to kind of have a hybrid of being able to take advantage of all that. But yes, LawBank is still our home. Our attorneys still are able to work there. I can tell you that with our fifth cohort, we started boot camp last week. And on the Monday we started boot camp, our cohort member who lives in Denver was right at LawBank, meeting everybody and working already. So yes, the nest is there and we will return to it.
Justice Hart, with LEJ being an incubator, one could say that it's been your baby since inception. Why has this program been so important to you?
Well, Erica, I have been passionate about access to justice and closing or shrinking the access gap for as long as I've been practicing law, for as long as I've been since I was a law student, I would say, actually. Justice and equality and principles of fairness in our society are core to who I am as a person. And I think one of the fundamental flaws in our legal system is that it does not provide equal justice to all as it is currently configured. And we as lawyers have both the opportunity and the obligation to do something about that. There are lots of different efforts out there. I support all of them. But around about 2013, I first learned about the affordable law practice incubator movement that was taking hold around the country. And I was frustrated that we didn't have anyone here in Colorado who was trying to teach new lawyers or lawyers new to the idea of providing affordable representation, how they could do that and how that was truly fundamentally a public interest, public service, professional path. Even when it's a private for-profit law firm, what you're doing is trying to meet an unmet legal need for people who can't afford what we, I think, foolishly describe as the market for legal services. And so it was a passion project of mine for many years before I was on the court to educate folks in Colorado about this concept that we could teach socially conscious young and even not so young lawyers how they could make a good living while providing this public service and really making a difference in people's lives. And fortunately, things sort of came together in 2018. I think a number of different things kind of gelled at that point. We had deans at the law schools who were willing to support this effort. There's a community of access to justice-minded lawyers in Colorado who were committed to making it happen. Lori Gilbertson, the executive director, happened onto our path and I think has been a driving force to make this a success. But yeah, for me, it was a passion about access to justice and about expanding the concept of what a public interest law job could be.
So what has been the response of the legal community to the incubator? You said that they were good at starting off, that they continued their support. What has been the response?
You know, I would say the response is uniformly positive when people hear about it. And that our biggest problem, and I think this is true for so many important efforts that go on, our biggest problem is breaking through the endless amount of noise that's out there. And the number of times that people who, it seems clear to me, should have known about Legal Entrepreneurs for Justice since our beginning, say, oh my gosh, if I had heard about this, I would have joined 2 years ago. If I had heard about this, I would have given money. If I had heard about this, I would have wanted to be involved. And sort of figuring out that, how do you get past that, if I had heard about this? That's the biggest challenge, but I haven't yet encountered a person who has said, well, that's just not a good idea. I think it's really consistent. Wow, that's great that you're doing it.
And you said that it has the support of the law schools and also it's got the support of you, but the judicial in general.
Yes, my court is extremely supportive of Legal Entrepreneurs for Justice, both as a sort of moral enthusiast matter, but also as a financial matter. The court gives support to LEJ through funding from CAMP, the Colorado Attorney Mentor Project, which is, as I'm sure we'll talk about today on the podcast, an integral part of being a member of LEJ.
So I have to ask, since I hinted at it at the intro, so why do you hate the name Modern Law?
Well, I think it requires a little bit of context. Before the Modern Law Practice Initiative was called the Modern Law Practice Initiative, it was the Modest Means Task Force, and the focus was on representing people who couldn't afford lawyers at rates that we describe as market rates. That also was a flawed name. The truth is that lots of people who would not self-describe or even reasonably be described as being people of modest means can't afford lawyers at market rates because the market for legal services is fundamentally broken. So I understand the need to replace the Modest Means Task Force with something else, but I don't think the Modern Law Initiative, I don't think that title in any way describes a focus on serving people at something other than market rates. I think it suggests, you know, modernness, but first of all, that's a very abstract and meaningless term. And I worry that it becomes unmoored from that commitment to shifting away from this illusory. And I want to emphasize, as I already have hinted many times, I think that the concept of the market for legal services is a deeply broken concept. It's not, doesn't run like any normal market. But it works for lawyers who are able to find the small number of clients who can pay absurd rates. But I just think that the term modern law practice is insufficiently descriptive of the mission.
Gotcha. Well, we do have to thank you for the mission statement, since you were in putting that part together. So we'll just kind of overlook the name at the moment. Like I said, I'll keep working on you.
and as you know, because we've been working together on these things for years, I know the people who are involved in the modern law project are deeply committed to the same mission that I'm deeply committed to. So it really is just a question of terminology, not a question of commitments. And awesome. Shared values are more important sometimes than shared vocabulary.
Justice Harp, I'd be curious to know what you have been most proud of thus far about the participants in LEJ and what they've been able to do in our legal community.
I think there are a couple of different things that have really struck me about the lawyers who have come through LEJ up to this point. One is the diversity of their practices and their reasons for coming into the program. Two is the diversity of the communities that they serve. I feel like we are really finding lawyers who are committed to serving not only populations outside of the metro area, but also different racial populations, different populations in terms of kind of where they're coming to the legal system from. And then the third thing I would say is just amazes me every time I hear about it is, you know, we say that lawyers who are participating in this program have to do 20 hours of pro bono service a week during that first 6 months. but to a person, they're so far exceeding that, both in the number of hours and in the duration of time that they remain committed to pro bono work. And I think it just speaks to the kind of people, but also to the value that doing that pro bono work really does bring to the development of a lawyer. So those are the things that kind of most strike me.
Justin, you were part of the inaugural class of LEJ. So I'd like you to start off by just telling our listeners, what has that experience been like?
Sure. It's been an amazing experience on a lot of different levels. You know, I came to it trying to learn how to build a better practice and become a better lawyer, as far as, you know, running a business, a law firm, but left, I shouldn't say left because I haven't left. I don't think anyone will leave after you become a part of it. But since I finished the formal part of LEJ, you know, walking away with lifelong friendships, community, mentors, you know, being able to connect with the community through the pro bono piece and being able to connect with other organizations that I hadn't previously been able to connect with are some of the biggest things among many others that I gained through the experience.
Where were you in your career prior to wanting to join LEJ, and what drew you to make that change?
After I finished my education, I got an LLM and law degree. I worked for a Denver-based estate planning firm for about 3 years. I did a brief stretch at an accounting firm and then had started my own firm around 9 months, 10 months before I started the program, and had already started it before I even learned about LEJ. But one of the things about starting your own firm is it's very intimidating for a lot of reasons, but mostly I guess two things that I think LEJ do really well is, first, you feel very isolated. So LEJ, I saw as an opportunity to come together with my peers and other, you know, mentors and leaders to not feel that so much when I was running my practice, and being able to sort of use the collective knowledge of the people that I was going to be joining. And then also, I personally don't have any business training or anything like that. So being a lawyer by background, running a business was something that I had to learn. And I was looking for a way to try to learn that in a structured way that would be helpful and help me sort of learn all these things and incorporate them as quickly as possible.
If someone right now listening is really the message of the program and what we're talking about is striking a chord with them, and they are thinking, maybe this is something that I should do, what would be your advice to them, having been in that position before?
I think the biggest thing is I do think that if you're contemplating making the decision to go out on your own and start your own firm, I think you need to really seriously sit down and think about that decision, because it's a very important decision. The biggest thing is, be honest with yourself and have the conversation whether or not this is something that you just kind of want to do and you think would sound fun, or is it something that you're really committed to? Because I think if you're not fully committed to it, it's not going to work. So I think that's step one, is to figure that out. And then once you do make that decision, if you decide that it is for you, then just jump in head first and don't look back.
And for you, what has been the best part about being a LEJ participant?
I would say the relationships that I've developed through LEJ have meant the most to me. To be connected with people who are like you, who are trying to do the same thing as you, is such a powerful, powerful thing to help you figure it out and navigate it. So I would say that's the most important thing.
And if you could go back and do it over again, would you? And would you do it sooner?
So 100% yes, I would do it again. No doubt about it. And the only reason I didn't do it sooner is because it didn't exist. If I had access to this, and I think it's really cool to come to it from my perspective to be someone who did practice sort of traditionally at a law firm for a few years before going out on my own, I was scared. And so to be able to see people who are starting their legal career through this program is amazing. And so, you know, that was something I had probably wished I could do when I had graduated from law school. I just didn't think was possible. I just didn't have enough belief in myself or whatever to fully step out completely on my own from the very beginning. But I would have had to seriously think about that if something like this was available to me when I was graduating, because I think it covers a lot of the things that we all, and certainly myself included, worried about when I was trying to make that decision.
You know, what Justice Hart talked about was, you know, that people who hear about the program, there's this uniformly positive reaction to it, you know, that they get excited about it and that's such a cool thing. And it is this new and unique thing. And one of the ways that we're really getting the word out and trying to break through that noise that's kind of everywhere on everyone all the time are with people like Justin, because they become our ambassadors and they go out and they are these examples of what, you know, people in LEJ can do and what they can achieve. And, you know, Justin's participation in the program didn't end when he graduated last December, because in our current cohort, we have someone who came to us because of Justin, because they met Justin when he was volunteering for Metro Volunteer Lawyers. And he seemed so happy that she had to know the secret. And he said, LEJ, here she is, launching her own family and employment law practice, where she's going to be serving, you know, this target market and doing so much good in the world. So Justin's effects, you know, that effect of being this ambassador and this example for LEJ, it's like, you know, a ripple in a pond. And I think that's how we're really going to start to break through that noise, you know, and Lauren and Erica being here with you is helping us break through that noise too. So thanks to all of you for that.
Justin, what advice would you give someone who wants to apply to make the best of their application and sort of set themselves on the best footing to become a member of LEJ?
Yeah, I would recommend taking some time and sitting down and contemplating what your firm that you want to start by joining LEJ might look like. Not to have a final product and to have a perfect template of what your firm might look like. But I think that's the best way to start thinking in the right mindset of what you're going to be doing as far as LEJ goes. And the other thing I would really encourage is to connect and get involved, like Lori said, info sessions or just reaching out to her directly, checking us out on social media, all that good stuff. I think that's a really good way to just sort of be around that. That's, you know, you'll be around those kinds of conversations and see what that might look like to hopefully help you start to craft what your firm might look like in the future.
You got me thinking, Justin, with Connect, most people who are interested in LEJ will, if they haven't been to an info session or even if they have, will contact me. And inevitably, I will end up connecting them with other people in the LEJ community. Justin gets a lot of those emails. Lauren, I know you get some too, and Erica gets some too, and Justice Hart does as well. Just to learn more, learn as much as you possibly can. Launching your own firm is a big deal. It's a big deal. Making a commitment to do that and to take advantage of the support of a program like LEJ is a big deal also, and requires a commitment. And we really look for those kind of creative and innovative attorneys that Lauren is talking about, you know, and also people who are, you know, not just committed to being creative and innovative, but, you know, created, but committed to the entrepreneurial journey, because it is a journey and it is intense. And it does require kind of a community of support like we provide, but it also requires your own kind of grit and resilience to know that, you know, you're in it for the long haul, because that's the life that you want to create and that's the good that you want to do in the world. And that's how you want to practice law.
I can certainly attest to the very wonderful and almost magical community that LEJ has built that is, like you said, Lori, so creative, right? The first training from the day one is there is no box, right? So there is this sort of unleashing of be as creative as possible in the legal profession, which is uncommon. It's not everywhere. And so this community of practitioners who has really embraced that mentality and that mind shift is just so refreshing to be around. And so if anyone is interested in joining LEJ or learning more about what the program is like, where can they go? What can they do?
Okay. Well, one place to get information is our website. It's LEJCO. So like LEJ Colorado, LEJCO.org. There's information about the program, about application deadlines, and everything on there. We accept cohorts in June and in November of each year. We kind of time those around when the bar exam happens and when people are accepted to the bar. So you can look on there. Applications are usually due about a month and a half or so to 2 months before a cohort begins. You kind of work backward from that. However, I do want to say, as a small organization, or I say small and mighty and growing organization, we have flexibility. So if you look online and you've missed a deadline and you are dying to come into LEJ, do the same thing that I will advise you to do to get information, which is just to contact me, the executive director. My email is online, but it's super easy to remember. It's exec. Direct. So it's execdir@lejco.org. One more way to learn about LEJ is attend some of our events. We have, we publicize them on social media and on our websites. Join our mailing list, and we'll let you know. You can join right from our website, and we'll let you know about the events we have coming up. We've been hosting something called the Morning Brew. It's a community event. You can come meet members of the community, hear from experts in the community. We're hosting with Law Bank a mindfulness and meditation series with our wonderful collaborator, Law Bank. The first Wednesdays and sometimes Fridays of each month. So you can come meet members of the community there. Many people who have come to LEJ have kind of gotten to know us that way as well. So please, we open our events to everyone, and you can join that and just get a sense of what we're like and start exploring.
And when you say join, are you starting to do in-person things then?
Right now we're still doing it online, but we're hoping maybe by September to be back in person with some things. And, you know, I'm sounding like a YouTuber, but right now, but we're on LinkedIn and on Facebook and on Instagram. So subscribe and follow us and you'll learn a lot.
Thank you so much to our guests today. We learned so much and hopefully our listeners are feeling inspired. It is now time for Karen Safran, our helpline hellion, to share with us another question and answer from the How to Start a Revolution hotline.
Thanks, Lauren. We got a lot of positive feedback to our last question and answer pod, and that spurred a number of questions coming in. So why don't we get right to this current question, which talks about a subject near and dear to all of us, which is marketing.
Hi, my name is Julie. I'm calling from the law offices of Julie Payne in Nederland, Colorado. I was wondering if you could share any tips that you have about how to use LinkedIn as a marketing tool. Thanks a lot and have a great day. Thanks.
That's a great question. And as it turns out, tying this episode together, Julie Payne is a member of the fourth cohort of LEJ. We thought that it would be appropriate to send this question over to Karen Muscule, and apologies if I have just butchered her last name, but she is the Director of Legal Talent at the Colorado Attorney General's Office, and she was a guest on our Modern Networking Connecting in a Virtual World episode. So I'll throw it from a Karen to Karen. Let's hear Karen's answer to the question.
So when thinking about using LinkedIn as a tool for networking, the first thing you want to consider, and it sounds obvious, is what you want to use it for. Are you looking to seek other job opportunities? Are you looking to make professional connections for sponsorship or mentorship? Are you looking to grow your business and your client base? So, you know, be thoughtful about what it is you're hoping to get out of it, because there's a lot you can do with your LinkedIn profile. And what you want to do is really tailor your LinkedIn profile to what it is that you're seeking. So for example, a lot of times I will see someone's profile that that looks more like a resume and it captures the work that they've done in the past. But maybe this is, so for example, say their LinkedIn profile is filled with family law, but what they keep telling me is actually, I want to do something else. Well, if you want to do something else, then you really have to go a little lighter on the family law experience, for example, and talk more generally about the skills and attributes that you think you can bring to another table, essentially. So you might want to talk generally about your litigation skills. You might want to talk about interpersonal skills, client communication, that type of thing, so that you're really highlighting what's transferable. Also, I would always make sure when drafting your LinkedIn profile that it's written in the first person. Sometimes I see them written in the third. I don't think that that doesn't make sense. So make sure that it's current. So the beautiful thing about LinkedIn is that unlike a resume where you're trying to stick to one or two pages, you get to put a lot more on your profile. So this is a chance for you to really market yourself. And again, maybe it's to attract clients, maybe it's for another job opportunity, but you can put more rather than less. Now that said, think about it this way. Whenever you get an email that's five paragraphs long, it's a lot. So, you know, be choosy about the content that you're using, but it's a marketing piece. So again, this is a place for you to, you can attach a writing sample. You can talk a little bit more in depth than you might on your resume about your professional development skills. So you can go a little bit deeper, but also be concise. I would avoid doing things that are too paragraph heavy because again, this is a website. People don't want to read a lot. So I think keeping it tight and concise is best, but you can go a little bit deeper and broader with respect to the skills. Also make sure that your LinkedIn profile always matches whatever is on your resume. Because as a recruiter myself, when I find discrepancies between those two, it always makes me ask questions. And you never want anyone to ask sort of red flaggy type questions when they're looking at the content. So then as far as making connections, use LinkedIn for the tool that it is for creating these connections and with connecting with people through others that you know, or through companies that you're affiliated with, or organizational groups that you're affiliated with. This is the purpose of LinkedIn. So don't be shy. If you see, for example, say we're connected and you see that I'm connected to so-and-so who works at a company that you're excited about working at, then you can reach out to me or you can reach out directly to that person. Always make sure you're personalizing the message though. I would say something like, "Hi Jane, I'm really excited to connect with you. I know Karen Mashuli from X, Y, and Z, and she suggested you'd be a great person to connect to, or I'd love to learn more about working at Microsoft." So a lot of times people will just send you a let's connect type of invite without any personal message. And if the person doesn't have any specific connection to my profession or to the kind of work that I do, I'm usually pretty wary about accepting those. So just even in two lines, tell me who you are and why. And then usually I'm like, oh yeah, of course. Boom. And we can connect. You know, you can also be obviously looking at job, you know, different job positions on LinkedIn. That's a great way to be networking, to begin doing research on companies. And remember that the research part of seeking out other opportunities is really important. And LinkedIn can be a tool for that. So in addition to just saying like, oh, I'm interested in Microsoft and it looks like they have some positions open, this is a chance for you just to learn more about what the company might do, what particular individuals in a given role might do. So don't feel like an opportunity has to exist for you to create it. And, you know, my last tip is be responsive and be responsive quickly to messages that you receive through LinkedIn. You know, even if someone reaches out to you and it's not necessarily an opportunity or a connection that you're interested in making, just a quick, nice response back sort of completes that. And I think sets the right professional tone.
That was really interesting. Lauren, do you have any particular tips that you like to use for marketing on social media?
I like to think of it as a conversation and not as a sales pitch. Nobody wants to be sold anything, whether it's on LinkedIn or any of the other social networks. And so really just starting any post that you are sharing, thinking of it as a conversation or an opening liner to start a conversation with the folks who are on there. So even if it's something that you are promoting about yourself or a question that you want to ask to get a discussion going, thinking of it as a conversation is a great way to take some of that fear out of posting on something like LinkedIn, but also makes you just feel more comfortable and may even become something that's fun as you do it more and more.
Well, and actually, Lori, since we have you here, do you have anything to add in terms of LinkedIn?
90% of lawyers are on LinkedIn. As a calling card, it can't be beat. You know, you need to have a LinkedIn profile, and your profile in very few words can say a lot about you and your firm. So even before you post anything, think really hard about what you want that to look like, what you want your headline to be. You have a lot of opportunity in a few words to really put your brand out so people can tell a lot about you and what you do before you even post anything. And I would just say value. I can't stress it enough. Value, value, value. Your content should be value. Adding value to people, teaching them something, educating them. Don't be selling. Like Lauren said, no one wants to be sold to. They want to learn. They want things that are going to help them improve their practice and improve their life. So add some value. Don't sell.
Lori, thanks for adding that on. And in terms of adding value, and that's where we come in with the helpline. So if you are interested in becoming a revolutionary or wanting to be a revolutionary on our future episodes, just call the How to Start a Revolution helpline and leave us a message. We'll play your question on the next podcast, and more importantly, we'll provide an answer. So make sure to leave your name and the name of your firm or organization so everyone knows who their fellow revolutionaries are. The phone number is 303-824-5399. Again, that's 303-824-5399. The number is also going to be posted on the MLPI community page. Welcome to the revolution. You've got questions, we've got answers.
Thank you for joining the Modern Law Revolution podcast. Keep that disruption going. Until next time.